First, on New Year's Eve, we did a segment on new vehicles to watch for in 2020. Many of the most anticipated models are electric cars, with General Motors, Ford, Tesla, Porsche, and Volkswagen all releasing new models. We didn't plan on spending the entire segment talking about electric cars. That's what happened. So we wanted to bring our guest back before too long to cover the non-electric varieties coming on the market. If you missed that conversation, by the way, you can listen at WPR.org. Among the highlights for non-electrics include a big change to the Corvette, the return of some familiar vehicles of the past, and a new SUV with a starting price of less than $20,000. Jamie Page Deaton is the executive editor of the U.S. News Best Cars team. Jamie, great to have you back.
Thank you so much for having me.
Big picture, before we start talking about individual models, Jamie, how big a year is this shaping up to be for traditional, i.e. non-electric vehicles?
Well, I mean, right now, the 2020 is shaping up, you know, to be a little bit less than the highs in terms of sales that we've seen from, like, you know, 2015, 2016. And that's simply because there was a lot of pent-up demand in the years following the recession. Now, for most buyers, that and has been met. So we're starting to see sales level off and decline just a little bit. But the big trends still remain. People want SUVs. They like them big. They like them expensive. Automakers are coming up with some innovative and kind of flexible ways of getting people into cars that they might not otherwise be able to afford. And so really, you know, the industry kind of marches on.
What are those innovative and flexible ways to get people into cars they can't afford? I'm curious about that.
Well, I mean, there's a couple of ways. One is they are lengthening loan terms, in a lot of cases, upwards of 80 months. Now, if you're a personal finance person, you know what a terrible idea that is, because you're going to owe a lot more than that car is worth for most of the lifespan of that car, which means that if you get into an accident or you need to buy a new one because the car no longer suits your needs, it's going to be very difficult for you to get out from under that debt. Other things that automakers are doing is they're offering a lot of leases on cars. Now, leasing can be a great way to get into a new car if you like to always get a new one every 2 or 3 years. You don't drive too many miles. But like in the long run, when you're thinking about personal finance, leasing a car means you will always have a car payment. You won't ever own the car outright. And so you really have to, you know, when you're considering these things, you have to ask yourself, you know what, if I have to extend the loan, you know, past 3 years, or if I couldn't afford to buy this car and so I'm leasing it instead, can I really afford the car? So that's something to keep an eye out. There's some analysts who think that there's a little bit of an auto financing bubble going on in the industry right now.
And staying on the point of affordability, the used car options are out there. And I wasn't really familiar with this. I understand a lot of car makers have their programs where they have guarantees for their own models of used cars.
Yes. So they have, most automakers have a certified pre-owned program. And if you're looking to kind of thread the needle between a new car and a used car, a CPO car can be a great way to do it. Because what happens with a CPO car is it's from the automaker's own brand. It has to be accepted into the program. And so that means that they usually have lower miles and are from a newer year than, you know, the typical used car. And then the dealer will inspect it. You know, they always tout how many inspection points that these, you know, that these CPO programs have. But it undergoes rigorous inspecting, and then it usually comes with some extra warranty coverage. And that warranty coverage varies by the automaker. And then there's some extra perks that you can get with a CPO car as well. So, you know, free service for the first year or two. And I should say not free service, but free scheduled maintenance, because there's a difference. And then also, you know, free loaner car, roadside assistant, things like that. Now, you will pay more for a CPO car than you would a straight used car. But if you're somebody who, you know, wants a used car, but is a little bit worried about kind of that reliability question, a CPO car can be a great way to kind of put your mind at ease. And actually at U.S. News, last year we did the best CPO programs, and we found that Lexus was the best one because they offered the, you know, the right balance of perks and mileage and inspection points. So you can go check out at cars.usnews.com and see, we have a breakdown of all the different CPO programs from each automaker to find the one that's right for you.
Talking to Jamie Page Deaton, executive editor of the U.S. News Best Cars team, looking at car trends and the models coming out in 2020. You can join in with your questions for Jamie about particular types of cars hitting the market at 800-642-1234. Got to get that four in there. 800-642-1234. Jamie, let's start naming some names. The Chevy Corvette Stingray, name with a lot of history there. A big change coming from General Motors. What's up?
Yes. So this is a huge change from an iconic nameplate from Chevy. And what they've basically done is they've taken the Chevy and they've made it a mid-engine sports car. Now, what that means is instead of the engine being in the front, as it is with most cars, or in the back, as it is with, you know, the Porsche 911, they've moved it to basically the middle of the car. So it's right up behind the driver in the passenger seat. And what this does, I mean, the benefit, other than, you know, a little bit of an interesting amount of trunk space in the front where the engine used to be, it gives the car almost perfect balance. Because if you think about the way that a car corners, and just think about how you swing a hammer, right? If the weight is in the front, you know, when you're swinging the hammer and you're holding it by the handle, it can get a little bit out of control the harder you swing it. Now, if that weight was moved to the middle, it would be a lot easier to control. And that's what you see. And this is something that brings the Corvette in line with a lot of other sports cars, and in fact, a lot of supercars. It just won the North American Car of the Year award. And it really, frankly, deserved it, because this was I've driven this, and it is truly makes the Corvette really, it gives it the performance chops to back up its iconic name. I mean, the Corvette's always been a great car, but there have been a couple of generations for it where it was really just kind of coasting on the name. That's not the case anymore. You could take the Corvette to the track and put it up against the best European supercars, and it would hold its own.
Here's another one with some name history for a less good reason. The Ford Bronco discontinued a while back after the infamous O.J. Simpson Bronco chase. This is back in the 90s. Now, it came off the market. Was it because of the O.J. thing, or did it just happen to happen at that time?
It just was a coincidence. Okay. I mean, it kind of ran up against, you know, not only the OJ thing, but also declining consumer interest, you know, raising gas prices. And the Bronco used to be a really old school SUV. It was body on frame, basically a truck with, you know, a nice back seat and a covered cargo area. The new Bronco, Ford is promising that it's going to have the same off-road chops, but you can expect it to be a lot more comfortable on road. That doesn't mean that it won't work. If you want to go on a low speed car chase throughout LA, what'll probably do just fine for that. But it's one that I think there's a lot of interest in just because it's got that iconic name and some early shots that Ford has released of the Bronco. Now, to be fair, it's covered in camouflage, so you can't get a lot of detail. But it looks like it's going to be, you know, in the same tradition of the original Bronco, where it's going to be very straight, very squared off kind of Tonka truck looking model. And so I know it's got a lot of enthusiasts, you know, myself included, very excited about it.
I'm not an auto industry insider. Is a low-speed LA car chase a standard benchmark?
You know, I'm sure that's part of the auto manufacturer's testing. You know, they'll get a white one, they'll get a friend of theirs to drive them around slowly and see how it goes.
Now, we don't always think of SUVs as being cheap. Chevy is trying to come up with a lower-priced one under the $20,000 mark. Tell us about the new Trailblazer.
So the Chevy Trailblazer, and this is another one that's reviving an old name, it's just because, you know, a lot of automakers like to do that because they can easily build on nostalgia and name recognition. This is going to be, I think, a really tough needle, you know, for Chevy to thread. And that's simply because SUVs, when they start to cost below $20,000, you can really start to tell. And what I mean by that is because you have to spend, you know, so much on the extra steel and the extra materials, the insides start to look a little bit, you know, a little bit less appealing than it might look on a car, because a car is a lot less expensive to build than an SUV. Now, that said, the subcompact SUV market, where you see cars like the Mini Countryman, where you see things like the Honda CHR, this is a really hot segment, because buyers are really enjoying it, because if you're somebody who, you know, maybe is downsizing, but you're used to the high seating position of an SUV, a subcompact SUV makes a lot of sense, because you don't have to pay for all the space you don't need, but you still get the seating position you're used to. So that's really what Chevy is betting on, that they can get in, you know, people into the SUV who are maybe trading down from something larger, or people who, you know, grew up and learned how to drive on SUVs need something, you know, a little bit small, need something small, but still like how an SUV feels. And so they can get them on their way into the SUV market, and maybe later they'll trade up to something larger.
Now, how about, Jamie, those people who want something that is not an SUV, just an old-fashioned, you know, car, we used to call them? Are they still making those? Are there new ones coming out on the market?
In a word, no. You know, I hate to disappoint you. There are some cars coming out, but the fact of the matter is that consumers have largely moved away from cars. Domestic automakers have moved away from cars. Ford has stopped building them. Chevy has stopped building them. Dodge, and, you know, they no longer make cars. Now, but what we have seen, though, is the brands that have stuck with cars have seen a lot of success, because basically everybody who maybe was going to go to Chevy and buy a car, they're now going to Honda and they're getting a Civic, or they're going to Hyundai and getting an Elantra. And so if you were going to look and go, you know, buy a Malibu, now instead they're buying a Kia Optima. So the brands that have stuck with cars have seen, you know, some benefit from it. But that said, overall, the entire market is just so SUV focused right now, and automakers are more than happy to give consumers what they want, which right now is SUVs.
We're talking about what's hot with new cars and what's not in 2020 with Jamie Page Deaton. She's executive editor of the U.S. News Best Cars team. We covered electric vehicles back on New Year's Eve. We're focusing on the rest of the market now, the cars, if they're out there, the trucks and the SUVs, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you in the market for a new vehicle? What are you looking at? What are you thinking about? Or a used vehicle, for that matter? Do you have a question for our guest about what's out there, the names you've seen on the market? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking about some of the new vehicles coming out in 2020. Jamie Page Deaton is our guest, executive director of the U.S. News Best Cars team. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you in the market for a new or used car, truck, or SUV? Is there one you're particularly interested in? Want to know what our guest thinks about it? What are the most important features you look for in a vehicle? What questions do you have about what's coming out this year? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll bring on a caller now. Cindy is with us in Appleton. Hi, Cindy.
Hello. Well, I have a 91 Park Avenue, and I have a 2002 Buick Century, and I just bought a 2009 little Subaru Forester SUV. And the little SUV rides like a buckboard, and my Buicks ride like butterflies on a cloud. So I can't say that the comparison of the ride is the same, so I'm kind of sad to hear that they're taking away the butterflies and giving me the buckboards.
Cindy, thanks for the call. Now, I've heard, Jamie, that the Forester with, I think, all-wheel drive does ride a little, I don't know, tight or something?
Well, I mean, I think, but I want to clarify it. I'm so thankful for Cindy for bringing this up. You know, most people will say SUV and they mean things like the Forester or the Bronco. And then they'll also lump in things like the Honda CR-V or the Buick Enclave. And really what we mean are crossover SUVs. Now, an SUV used to mean that it was built on a truck platform. Crossover SUVs, though, that's what you really want to shop for if you're looking for that smooth butterfly-like ride, which, what a great description right there. But because those SUVs, so if you take like a Buick Enclave, that's based on a car platform, or if you look at a Honda Pilot, something like that, they're going to drive much more like cars than the Subaru Forester is. And so you can get kind of the best of both worlds. Now, what you'll be leaving behind is the ability to go very far off-road, which I think for most people, what they're really looking for is, you know, better traction in the snow, maybe a little bit of extra ground clearance, but they aren't going to do much more than a dirt road. So in that case, an all-wheel drive crossover is great. But just know when you're shopping, you know, ask, is this a crossover or is it an SUV? Because a lot of people use the term, myself included, will use the terms interchangeably. And so you want to make sure you're getting something that works, you know, great for you.
Cindy, thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Jamie, I think a lot of times back in the day when we say SUV, we'd often use the adjective gas-guzzling SUV. Is that still the case? Do they still get particularly worse mileage than comparable cars might?
Well, they're still going to get worse mileage because they're going to be heavier, right? They're going to have things like all-wheel drive systems and that extra row of seats, and gas means, you know, or more weight means you use more gas because there's just more to haul around. Now, that said, though, they're not as bad as they used to be. So, and you can even get some really good hybrid SUVs. So, for example, the Toyota RAV4 Hybrid has that, you know, all-wheel drive, smooth, comfortable ride, lots of safety features, good cargo space, and it gets 40 miles to the gallon combined. So you can really kind of, you know, find an SUV or crossover that works really well for you, depending on what you're looking for. And honestly, too, you can even get some, if you're really looking to have an SUV but want to reduce your carbon footprint even more, you can get a plug-in hybrid SUV. Lincoln just put out a plug-in hybrid Aviator. And so you can plug it in, you can get around 20 miles on electric charge alone. And then when you're out of charge, the gas engine kicks in.
Let's bring on another caller now. Tier 2 is with us in Ironwood, Michigan. Tier 2, hi.
Hi. I'm a fan of my 2003 Honda Pilot. but the truth is it's not going to last forever. Does the guest have any opinions on late model used Honda Pilots, please?
What do you think, Jamie?
Well, I think, you know, I agree that your 2003 Honda Pilot's not going to last forever, but if anything's going to come close, it's going to be the 2003 Honda Pilot. No, the Honda Pilot, the newer ones, they just did a redesign about 3 years ago. It made it an SUV that is a lot more comfortable. The 2003 model was a little bit truckier. The new model, since the redesign, gets better gas mileage, has a smoother ride, and still has fairly decent reliability ratings. So that's definitely something you should look at. Also consider a Toyota Highlander, which is basically a, you know, a direct competitor to the Pilot. And then also take a look at the Hyundai Santa Fe. That's one that I think a lot of people, particularly if they've been, you know, lifelong kind of Japanese car buyers and they just look at Honda or they just look at Toyota, they forget to look at Hyundai and Kia. And Hyundai and Kia in the past couple of years have come out with products that are as good as, and in a lot of cases better than, what Honda and Toyota are offering.
Chair 2, thanks for the call. We'll go to Holly with us now in Sheboygan. Holly, hello.
Hi. I drove Blazers for years, and I'm talking back years and years. And then I went to a little Chevy Aveo when the gas prices were very high, and I drove that for 8 years. And when we start looking again, I had talked to a lot of friends, and they all bought Subarus. They did buy the Outback, but when I went looking for a new vehicle, I got behind the wheel of my Forester, and it was like my Blazer, only better. And I don't understand the bad ride the lady was talking about earlier. And now mine is a 2016, but I'm telling you, I wouldn't go back to anything anymore. I'd stick with my Forester forever.
All right, Holly, some Forester love there, Jamie.
Yeah, and I think there's basically, I think there's two types of people when you're talking about drivers. There's some people, you know, like Holly, and I would count myself in this camp because I drive a Toyota 4Runner, which is anything but smooth. But they really like a ride that feels a little bit more mechanical, where you can feel what the car is doing. And that means that, yeah, there's going to be a little bit of noise in the cabin, and you're going to feel every little bump in, you know, in the road. But there's something to that, that, for me at least, makes you feel a little bit more connected, and makes you appreciate the car as a machine. Now, then there are other buyers, you know, like Cindy, who like a more smooth ride that kind of floats you along. And, you know, I have to say there's definitely a place for that. So the test car that I'm getting in tomorrow is a 2020 Volvo XC90. And, you know, I live in D.C. I commute every day in my 4Runner, and I'm really looking forward to a smoother ride for a couple of days from the Volvo, just because the potholes really do knock you around a little bit. So it just comes down to personal preference. And, you know, when you're buying a car, just make sure on your test drive that you know the area and you find the absolute most torn up street that you can, and make sure that you can, you know, that you can tolerate the ride on it.
Holly, thanks for that call. We're talking to Jamie Page Deaton from the U.S. News Best Cars team, looking at the cars out in 2020. Rick is with us in Boscobel. Rick, hi.
Hi.
What'd you want to bring up, Rick?
Wondering about the new Jeep Gladiator truck, how good you think that is.
The Jeep Gladiator, Jamie.
So I absolutely love the Gladiator because it's basically three cars in one. I mean, it's a truck, it's an SUV, it's a convertible. And to my mind, that saves you money because you're buying one car instead of three. It just won the North American Truck of the Year award, was announced in Detroit just on Monday. And honestly, I think it's an absolutely great truck. Now, I also think it's super duper expensive. Jeep knows what they have there, and you can expect, and you know, the sticker price itself is already pretty high. And Jeep dealers are, you know, putting a premium on it. But for the money, and that Jeep feeling that you get when you can, you know, take the roof off, take the doors off. And I have to say, Rick, particularly if you live in like a rural area where maybe you need a car to take your trash to the dump in, or you're looking for something that's great for tailgating, something that's great for, you know, fishing, something like that, I think the Gladiator is an excellent choice.
Thanks a lot for the call, Rick. I want to take a couple minutes, Jamie, before we're done, to talk about some of the other vehicles that have you excited for 2020. There probably won't get to everything, but what have you liked so far? What are you looking forward to?
So I'm really looking forward to the new Land Rover Defender. This is kind of a very old school looking SUV, and Land Rover is one of the few automakers that manages to balance both great on-road performance with excellent off-road performance. And it's got that, you know, upright boxy look that for me is really appealing. I'm also looking forward to the new Cadillac Escalade, because that's one that hasn't been redesigned for a while. And Lincoln, with their Navigator redesign 2 years years ago really just put a shot across Cadillac's bow with how good the Navigator is. And this is something of a, you know, do or die moment for Cadillac, because they've really seen, you know, a lack of sales successes in the past couple of years, and they're really depending on the Escalade to pull them out. So I'm really excited to see how that goes. And then I'm also really excited for the electric Mini. Absolutely love Minis, and to put an electric motor in one of those, because they're so much fun to drive, and electric motors give you all that torque on demand, and you combine that with the really zippy handling of a Mini, and I just can't wait to get behind the wheel of one.
And Jamie, in our last few moments, if we're not super excited about the shiniest, newest thing, is there a good 2019 model out there we should still be watching for?
Oh, absolutely. There's plenty of good 2019 models out there. I would take a look at the Hyundai Santa Fe, and really also take a look, if you need three rows, the Hyundai Palisade and the Kia Telluride. They were new last year. They're three-row SUVs. They're coming from brands that most people associate with affordability, but I have to tell you, I've driven them into, you know, the valet stands at luxury hotels, and the valets absolutely love them, which to me, you know, is a sign that, okay, this is a good car. So...
That's always have the valet take it for a test drive. Good advice,
yeah,
Jamie.
Exactly.
Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Been talking to Jamie Page Deaton, executive editor of the U.S. News Best Cars team. We talked through about cars and new car features coming out this year. We also had Jamie on back on New Year's Eve to talk about why 2020 may be a big year for electric vehicles. You can listen to that conversation, learn about the electric cars and SUVs on the market. Find that at WPR.org.